Of course, all things, you know, negotiating international arbitration agreements with the state. Of course, with private companies increasingly involved in contracts with the states and state-owned entities, particularly in infrastructure and energy projects. You know, negotiating international arbitration agreements poses, you know, unique challenges.
In Jaloland, of course, we do have Veronica Connolly on the line, senior associate in the dispute resolution practice at leading law firm Cliff Deckerhoff Mayer. Says this contract often linked to significant foreign investment, risk disputes over regulatory changes, political instability and state control, emphasizing the importance of carefully crafted arbitration clauses.
Absolutely.
Right? She's going to tell us more.
She'll give us some, you know, insights, you know, on a few issues. Vero, very good afternoon. Welcome to Josie FM.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So V and I were discussing your surname off air, you know. He says it's Connolly, and I say it's Connolly.
I did not say Connolly. You heard how I pronounce your surname.
Connolly. I'm like, how do we do it?
But you did hear how I pronounce your surname, ma'am, yeah? I said Connolly.
Yes, Connolly.
Yes.
It reminds me of that child, broccoli, you know.
It's great to have you with us, ma'am.
Nice
how
to
are you
have
doing?
You.
Yes, yes, good. Thank you. How are you
there? We're very well.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about it. Countering state immunity. I mean, how do private firms mitigate risk by negotiating specific waivers? Tell us more.
Yeah, so state immunity is a principle that's from international law and can be relied on by states to assert that because they're a sovereign state entity, they have immunity from legal proceedings. And so an arbitration tribunal or a court can't determine claims against them. And obviously that means private companies that have entered into a contract with the state, they run the risk, if the state breaches the contract, of not being able to enforce their rights against the state. And so, although there are exceptions to state immunity, and it doesn't always apply, rather than trying to rely on those exceptions, because they can vary from country to country, the best option is for companies to try and negotiate waivers of immunity from the state when they're negotiating the arbitration agreement. And I think really we're looking at three types of waivers. The first is what's called waiver of immunity from suit, and that means that you're allowed to actually start and have hearings heard against the state. And the second is waiver of immunity from recognition, which means the courts are allowed to recognize that there's a legal and enforceable judgment against the state. And then the third one is the really important one, which is waiver of immunity from execution. And this means that courts can actually order the seizure of state assets and monies to pay awards or judgments made against the state. And this is really important because under the concept of state immunity, it can be really difficult for companies to enforce awards against the state because state immunity can give protection to assets that are used by the state for sovereign functions like military equipment or properties they use for diplomatic or consular purposes. And so we're looking really for companies to obtain waivers saying that they can enforce against commercial assets of a state because otherwise they're going to really struggle to get their money back should the state breach the contract.
But what there are some of the key considerations in arbitration agreements with states? I mean, maybe you can just share practical advice for firms on, you know, structuring arbitration clauses to protect their interests.
Yeah, so in addition to the waivers from state immunity,
a
really important thing to think about is, does the arbitration agreement protect the fairness and independence of the process? And so a common concern amongst companies entering into contracts with states is that if a dispute arises, the courts of that country might not be independent or impartial. So, for example, if you're in a country where it's the government who appoints judges, there might be concerns that those judges might not necessarily be independent if you're trying to bring a claim against the state. And so when you draft the arbitration clause, you can mitigate against those risks. So, for example, you could specify that the arbitrators have to be from a country that's a totally separate third country that neither the state or you are a party from, and equally you can also choose to have the arbitration legally seated in a third country that's not associated with the state or the company, which again helps to sort of mitigate against potential concerns about bias from the courts.
Right.
And that's not to say, of course, that the courts will be biased. A lot of the time it's just a perception or a concern by the parties that isn't borne out in practice, but you can build some things into your contracts that help protect against those concerns.
Right. Well, let's talk fairness. Maybe let's talk risk as well, especially when it comes to governmental influence. How do we then address potential bias or state influence when it comes to such?
Yeah, so I think, as I was just mentioning, a lot of the time this is a concern about potential bias rather than actual bias, and it can be very difficult to anticipate the circumstances in which you think that will arise. But by drafting a clause that provides for the arbitration to take place in a totally separate jurisdiction where the tribunal won't be subject to the same risk of potential political influence, you're really sort of transporting the dispute into an international forum where it can hopefully be heard totally independently and fairly.
Let's talk about navigating authority and jurisdictional challenges, understanding jurisdiction specific requirements and also approval processes that impact diligence in cross-border contracts. Maybe let's dive into that.
Yeah, so arbitration is a consensual process, which means it's different from court litigation because both parties have to agree to it.
Yeah.
They agree to it in the contract by entering into the arbitration agreement. But that means for the arbitration agreement to be binding and effective on the parties, whoever signs that contract has to have the proper authority and approval to do so. And when you're negotiating with a state, there's sometimes jurisdiction-specific requirements in that country that apply to arbitration agreements. So, for example, in Saudi Arabia, government bodies can only agree to arbitrate if they have permission from the Prime Minister or if it's provided for by law. So what you need to do is, in each country, you need to take specific legal advice as to any specific requirements there are for authority or jurisdiction, because otherwise you might find that actually the state didn't have the authority to enter into the agreement, and then you're left, you can't arbitrate, you have to go to the courts, which is what you're hoping to avoid.
Very interesting indeed, and some of the things that we really should look into and learn also as a society, talking everything cross-border complexity, negotiating international arbitration agreements with a state. Talking to Veronica Connolly, Senior Associate in the Dispute Resolution Practice at leading law firm, Clef Decker Hofmeyr. Vero, is there a website for further insight or further engagement, or maybe someone who wants to read more into this that we can log into?
Absolutely. So on Clef Decker Hofmeyr's website, we have an international arbitration page where we have articles and advice and sort of tips that companies should bear in mind when they are concluding arbitration agreements with the state. Because, like I mentioned, negotiating and contracting with the state is not necessarily as straightforward as with a normal commercial counterparty.
Lovely. Thank you so much for your time and good afternoon,
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. All right, 4 minutes to 4 o'clock. Yeah, keep 4.